Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? It's Ralph Sutton, the SDR show. This week, a living legend, Glenn Matlock, Sex Pistols, is live in the studio. Me and James Mattern. James, also a crazed Sex Pistols fan. Tells some great stories, really fun episode. And if you were a Sex Pistols fan, you could have heard this episode 5 days ago, commercial free, at GasDigital.com. Use the code SDR, get a 7-day free trial, especially now while that beta test is going on at the GasDigital.com website. It's a great time to become part of the network. But really, wherever you're listening right now, that's all that matters. Maybe you're on YouTube, maybe you're on iTunes or Spotify. I don't care. I'm just happy that you're listening to the show. And maybe head over to MerchEngine.com and pick up an SDR t-shirt if you're feeling cool. But here it is right now, the Glenn Matlock episode of The SDR Show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is the hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone fuck the host. It's weed, I'm beat, it's hookers and blow. It's art, it's fart, you need to know. The SDR show. Let's go.
Alrighty, it is the SDR show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll show. I am in studio with James Mattern.
What up, Ralph?
Doesn't happen often that James is in studio. Happens even less frequent that we sit side by side.
This is cute. Look at us.
It makes us look
adorable. Compare each other. Can I just say this? This is, since my birthday, you have had me with guests that I just love, and I get nervous.
I know, it's cool.
Like, this is unbelievable.
We had the Go-Go's on a couple weeks ago, and you were super nervous.
Nile Rodgers, nervous.
Nile Rodgers, and then this being, I know one of your, he's from one of your favorite bands of all time.
Absolutely.
My favorite moment that happened just before the show started, and very nice, Glenn, very, I would say like a, just an air of class about you. That this is what it is. You're English. Okay. We get enamored with that, right? But you say, which is nice, remind me your names again, which shows just that you're a cool dude, right? And we say our names, and then you say, I'm Glenn. Like, we don't fucking know.
But it's really nice because he's a good fella. He's a good bloke.
It's a nice thing to do. It just shows that you are a good man.
All right. Okay. If you say so.
You don't think so? You just think it's...
Well, you don't know the half of it.
Well, I just mean, look, I mean, of course, we're all, well, we'll get into your entire life in a second, but it just shows that you're, I mean, at your heart, you're a good dude.
Manners maketh man. When yes. I come to America, which I always find quite interesting, you see some big, really heavy dude, something like that, but I always call people sir and ma'am.
Right, me too. But nowadays, it's weird, because I have to try and drop the sir or ma'am, because of the world we live in with pronouns.
Oh, well, don't start with that.
I don't want to listen. All I'm saying, I don't know if I, you know, I don't really care. You call yourself whatever you want to call, but I just feel like if I just say, excuse me, is better than excuse me, sir, because you could be opening up a can of worms. That's all I'm saying.
I say, my friend. My friend. I've deserved it right in the goddamn middle there.
Condescending.
Yeah, but in English, we go, all right, love.
Love.
Does that work? That's gender neutral?
Well, unless you say it to a big.
That might cause a problem with a big dude, right?
Yeah,
I would imagine.
There is that.
Seems
but
condescending.
You never know, yeah. You know.
And long story short, you end up dating him for 6 months. You never know.
Well, I think Glenn knows. I think Glenn knows what the answer is.
All right, by the way, let's give the right intro here. Musician, author, part of the original line of the Sex Pistols, the Rich Kids, the Spectres, the Damned, Glenn Matlock and the Philistines, the Faces with Blondie, the International Swingers, an actor as well. It is goddamn Glenn Matlock.
Sounds like I want to make my mind up, doesn't it?
But it's just a fucking amazing. It really is amazing to have you in the studio. We're just thrilled
it's
to have
nice
you here.
Nice to be here.
It's great.
Yeah. And the new album, which I've been, was privy to, because I've watched some interviews with you, and a lot of other people are cooler than us, and they had the whole album. I just had three songs.
Oh.
So of the three songs I got into, I dig. The cover was one of them. Head on a Stick was another, and the new one... what's it called? The
Magic Carpet Ride.
The Magic Carpet Ride.
This Ship.
The Ship is the newest
this,
one.
Right?
This Ship.
Yeah.
What I said, this is totally off script, not about the music for a second. To me, you look like someone. Shannon disagrees. You probably don't even know who he is. But watching the new videos and stuff, you have this like, it's a cool guy, rock and roll. You're like an elder statement of rock and roll, you know? And you ever hear Benjamin Bratt? Do you know who that is?
No, I can't. Sorry.
Shannon, can you bring up a picture of him, please? I know no one's going to agree with me, but something about your vibe, I think he looks like Benjamin Bratt. And there he is.
Oh, okay.
Do you know who that is?
Well, no, I can't say. He's got a similar kind of goatee beard.
Yeah, he's a little younger, but
he looks like he might work out a bit more than me.
But
which is not hard because I don't work out at all. But I don't mind going for a stroll as long as there's a coffee shop at the end of it.
He looks like he could be like a third cousin.
There's something about him. He looked really, like I said, well, you look like you're like, if you told me you're related to Benjamin Bratt, I'd believe it. I don't know why.
Well, okay.
I think you two see each other. You do that scene in Young Frankenstein.
Well, do you know what I was doing? Coming back for a gig late at night in England, down the motorway and stopped at the services. And I did what comes naturally. And I was washing my hands and there was a big bit, you know, which I presume to be a mirror. Mm-hmm. I was washing my hands and I went up to go like that, you know, when he combed my hair. And I looked up and I had the biggest fright in my life because at exactly the same moment, some other guy did it, thought it was a mirror. And it was a Chinaman. We both went, ah!
So it was basically the Young Frankenstein.
Yeah, that's fucking great. That's fucking hilarious. All right, so the new album is called Consequences Coming, right? Yep. Coming on April 27th. We talked about the cover of Magic Carpet Ride. The newest single is This Ship.
Well, hang on. It's not a cover of Magic Carpet Ride.
I'm sorry. I keep saying...
new song called Magic Carpet Ride.
Right.
And much to my chagrin, which is a French word that some of us English use sometimes, it basically means it's a posh word for embarrassment. I didn't realize that Steppenwolf had a song called Magic Carpet Ride until I'd written the song.
So you written the song. The cover is The Constant Craving of Katie Lang, right?
That's right, yeah.
Right, sorry, I got my covers screwed up.
But on the other end, if we're talking about covers, there's probably a few bits you might recognize from other records.
Right.
But don't tell anybody.
Well, that's one thing that you're very open with, even with Sex Pistols stuff, that you said, I'm going to pull this up there. One of the songs you kind of got inspired by ABBA.
Inspired by ABBA.
Right. And then the other one was inspired by Eddie Cochran. Yeah. Right. So you're open with the saying that I think it's weird when you tell a musician they can't be inspired by other musicians.
It's crazy.
It doesn't make any fucking sense.
Yeah, but you have to be crafty about it, you know. And the thing you must remember is when other musicians do it and steal something, it's pilfering, but when I do it, it's a homage.
It's a homage. It's an honor if I do it. If you do it, fuck you. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Did that ever come back to bite you in the ass when you're so open about that? Oh, this inspired me.
I think one of my strengths as a songwriter is that I'm quite good at covering up what I... And the thing is, if you write something that sounds like something that's too obvious, people are going to pull you up on it, so don't go there. Change it a little bit.
Right, makes sense.
There's also 12 notes in Western music.
Right, that's what
it's really difficult,
is
guys.
Is it 12? Yeah, I guess
there's 12. There's 12.
Yeah, what do I know? I'm not a guitarist.
Yeah, but there's lots of combinations of that.
Right.
I like one of the best quotes. One of my favorite artists is a guy called Jacques Brel. You heard of him?
I have not.
He was sang in French, but he was actually Belgian. Bowie covered his stuff. That's how I got into him. The Alex Harvey Band covered his stuff. Scott Walker covered his stuff, and he was a big like kind of chansonnier. He wrote the Makite part, which is if you go away, big ballad kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote a song about being a virgin in the Foreign Legion, and the brothel truck turns up. And
my kind of song.
He's in the queue, and the sergeant major's going next. The song in French is called "Au Suivant" and all that. And somebody asked, and Bowie did "My Death," which is by him,
mm-hmm.
right? Mm-hmm. Somebody asked him about his songwriting. He said, well, yes, there's only a few notes. He said, I must be mad, though, because you have three verses, you have maybe four lines in each verse, and every word has to fit a particular note, and you've got to tell a story in that. I must be mad to even try it.
Yeah.
It is, though, worth noting that you were, like, the only one with the real musical background back in the day, right?
No, I think we all had...
Because you wrote 10 out of the 12 songs,
of 12 songs. And
right.
We all had a musical background of some kind
in
of
In some degree, right.
And it was all kind of slightly different from
right.
each other. You
right.
know, there was some kind of crossover thing. But what me, Steve, and Paul liked was totally different from what John liked. He liked hippie bands.
Right. Is there truth?
You know when he wrote on the... It's quite famous that he wrote, I Hate Pink Floyd.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you know when gay guys marry a straight woman, it's known as a beard. I think him writing I Hate Pink Floyd was a cover-up for the fact that he
loves hippie bands. That makes sense. It was his beard of music.
Yeah, he liked to Van de Graaff generate and stuff.
Because he always shit on like the bands that seem to be the basis of you guys, like the New York Dolls. I remember in interviews, he'd be like, I never liked them. I remember like you and Steve going like, we liked them a lot. Like, yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah, I think he had a sneaking regard for them, but who knows, you know.
Yeah.
I want to focus a little further on the new record, because you have some great people with quite pedigrees on the record. Earl Slick is in, Slim Jim is in from Stray Cats.
Slim Jim was on the last album.
On the last album, and yep. Earl Slick is on this one.
Yeah, Clem plays on
it. And Clem is on this one from Blondie.
My mate Chris Musto in England, he's played with lots of different people as well.
And this is, if I'm not mistaken, your first time ever doing a guitar solo is on this record.
It is, yeah. Right? On this current single.
On the current single.
Head on a Stick.
Yeah, the first single, Head on a Stick.
And until I opened my big mouth, nobody knew.
Well, also, because you're very, I mean, granted, you've put out a lot of records under your name, but you're synonymous more with bass playing than you are with guitar playing.
I am, but I always started out on
the acoustic guitar,
and that's kind of, thing is.
I'm going to just make you impressed for a second. Your first guitar was given to you at the age of 10 for Christmas, and then that's where you got your first guitar, am I right?
Real quick, I hope he's wrong. I love him, but I hope he's wrong. I really want to see you with your wonderful accent, and also, Tom, he's wrong.
And your uncle first showed you your Fender bass.
That's right. Yeah.
Right.
And Colin. That's very good.
And you used to like watching the show Ready, Steady, Go, and that's kind of got you into music.
That was the best music show in the world ever.
Inspired you at 10 years old.
Yeah. 10, 11 years old.
Damn, I'll leave.
Is that bothering you?
Would you like a donut? I'll bring you guys. I'll just be the gopher for the rest of the show.
That's where you started a guitar, because you got a guitar first when you were 10,
got
right?
a guitar first. Yeah. And that's still, if anybody ever goes to London, it's actually on display. I don't know where it ended up in there. In the Hard Rock in Piccadilly, which was the first one. Opposite, on the other corner, there's an old bank, which is their kind of merch shop. And downstairs, they got a vault, which is the old bank vault. And they've got like John Entwistle's bass.
Yeah.
They've got Jimi Hendrix's Flying V. They got Les Paul's Les Paul number 2 there.
Wow.
Got Jimmy Page's Stratocaster or something. All arranged around this safe that looks like it's had the door blown open. And in it is that guitar me.
That's fucking crazy. Really? That's what?
You check it out.
So did you donate it or someone in your world donated it?
Somebody in my world donated it.
That's fucking cool as shit.
I flogged it a long time ago when I was a little bit tapped up, and it kind of ended up there somehow. But I was talking to the girl because I took my kids down there. Mm-hmm. I'd heard it was there. I didn't know why it was there. And I thought I was near there. I went to check it out, and I took my kids down there when I was younger. And I was talking to the girl who does like a little guided tour. And she said that of all the young kids that come in, they sort of pick up a mild guitar more than this other stuff because they don't really realize what it is, but they can identify with a cheap old plank. But I tried to play it, and no wonder I helped come up with punk rock.
By the way, also two sons named Sam and Louis.
I mean, what else are you gonna give him? Social security? What are you gonna do next year? Wait, minute 30, he's gonna tell you where you live. He's gonna give you the full address. You're gonna run out of here.
31 leg.
Also, because again, I didn't hear the whole record, but the things that I found fascinating, the Katie Lane cover, right, that of Constant Craving, which is the big song, and I think I'm going to see if I quote you incorrectly, is that you described it to your band as, let's pretend Rolling Stones Harlem Shuffle, but we're doing Constant Craving.
Yeah, exactly.
That's pretty cool.
Just for the feel, you know.
Right, for that vibe.
There's no point doing a cover of a song and making it exactly the same.
Of course. And the only time that makes sense to me is if you're a band or a group so out of left field, like a hip-hop group doing a rock cover, or a pop singer doing a heavy metal cover, then it makes sense to do a straight cover because it's coming out of left field.
Yeah.
But if you're rock doing rock or rock adjacent, Katie Lang, whatever, you might as well make it your own.
Yeah, but it don't rock that much, but it works. But, you know, I like things like that. I like Cake's version of I Will Survive.
Oh, I love that version.
You know, the way he really takes a liberty with the time.
But that's a good example of make it your own because it's out of left field.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah, I like
that's
that.
That's why I pulled it out as an example.
Yeah, it's really...
We're on the same page here, really.
And on this record, you only played bass on like one or two tracks, right?
Yeah.
Right, so that... Basically,
there's one song I felt bad about. I was very privileged to get Norman Watroy from the Blockheads, you know, the Enduring the Blockheads.
Hit me with your rhythm stick.
Sex and drugs and rock and roll, right?
Yeah.
He come and played some bass on it, and there was one song where I suggested that he did something on it, and he did it, and then he had to go away and was busy doing something else. And when I played it back, I thought, actually, it's not what he's done, but it was a bum steer.
Oh.
So without saying anything to him, I just went in and kind of read
that. I would imagine it has to happen a lot. I would imagine, unless you are bringing in real seasoned players, But I guess that, I mean, you are so synonymous with instruments, it's got to be hard to find someone. Even if you're just watching someone do something that you conceptualized, that can't be easy to just let go.
No, but anyway, that happened. But anyway, watching Norman Watroy play is fantastic because I've never been in the studio with him before. And, you know, you're trying to get a sound or let's just check the tuning. You know, play us an A. Every note he plays, he goes, bang! You know, instead of just going boom, he goes, bang! And it's like every note is from his inner tortured psyche. From
that's great. So the album is called Consequences Coming. Yeah. Right? And if anything you've been synonymous with for years besides music is your, is the word disdain good for political people? Is
disdain
that,
for certain political people,
yeah. Right? That's a fair.
It's that certain political people. That's kind of probably cover most of them.
Right. And this record initially started with Brexit.
Yeah, well, with Brexit and the lead and up Trump. To that, and Trump and the kind of lurch to the right that we've had in the Western world.
So it leads me to a couple of questions. One, in your realm of universe of musicians, are there any that are very leaning right that you won't work with because of their political views?
A couple, yeah.
Okay, that's interesting.
And when I found out, it hasn't been such a big surprise, but it's explained a couple of things to me about people's stances on things over the years. And I think anybody these days, especially with Brexit in England, who did vote for it, will keep very quiet about it.
I was in London in October, and everyone that we talked to hated it.
It's stupid.
Yeah.
Right.
It's a nonsense. It's a nonsense. It's an aberration. It won't last. How long it won't last for. I don't know. I was reading somewhere a while back. I can't remember the exact details, but Argentina did something like that maybe 20, 30 years ago, you know, where they're trading block, and they had to rescind it.
Well, just now, you know, Texas wants to separate from the country.
They've been flirting with that since I was a kid.
Good luck. Good luck. See what happens. But the quote that I like is that you said, I'm gonna read it verbatim. I think we've come full circle, but some of the younger kids need to do it because I'm too old to have my finger on the pulse of everything. So, like, as someone who's been so synonymous with, like, calling out political things that you don't agree with, there aren't a lot of young bands. There is nothing like, to my knowledge, that's like that now. Do you know, James? I don't think there is.
Band-wise, no. Some hip-hop. I remember, like, if we're going to go back to Trump when Kendrick Lamar and those guys, they went on the road. They brought Bob DeBono to impersonate him to open the show, mm-hmm. get booed, made statements. That is the youth music now, if we're going to be honest.
Right.
But,
right.
Yeah, it's not the same. It's like 77 in that when you guys and The Clash.
Why is that, do you think? Because I don't really know why.
Well, hip-hop is the youth?
No, not why people aren't calling things out.
Probably because it's not as big and mainstream, so why alienate potential people who can co-see them on the road in small places? I think that's what it is. If they had a bigger spectrum where they could get more people, where it's like, all right, well, I'm still going to get these people to come see me, I could push you away, I think maybe, but everyone's just struggling for what few dollars there is in rock music now.
So, and you think that's fair enough, or it's just the way it is?
I think it's unfortunately the way it is. Now, I was just in Nashville, and I think rock has morphed into outlaw country. I think there is more outlaw country, modern country people who are taking stances, which is crazy based on country music's history. But yes, I think that's where it's at right now, because people are just trying to survive. And it's like, why alienate?
Hmm.
Or they are saying things and we don't hear them because they are not big.
Yeah, there's that as well. I think it's kind of quite funny. There was a few people have written to me. There was a guy in England who was like an early postmodernist rock and roller just before punk. When punk was slightly beginning to happen, there wasn't a lot to go and see, but there was a sort of a rockabilly-ish kind of scene. There was Crazy Cavan was one of them. Bazooka Joe, who the Sex Pistols did, who supported their first gig, were a kind of a rockabilly band. There was another guy called Shakin' Stevens and the Sunsets, and they were really good. They played great, you know, and he sort of was like an English Elvis. He traded on that, except he wore slightly flared trousers. But that was kind of good.
Because no one's perfect.
When he did the dancing, it made these things look sort of flap a bit more. Anyway, he had a whole bunch of hits in England, quite straight things on early MTV, This Old House, mm-hmm. and things like that. He's just come out with a song I haven't heard it yet, called All You Need Is Greed, having a go.
That's beautiful.
That's
you know, and he's older than me. It's kind of funny. Good for him. So I think a few people are coming out, but it's the older people. Perhaps we think we've got less to lose.
The interesting thing is that one of the, and I get this from the Sex, we said in your Sex Pistols days, you never thought past the end of the week. And in some ways, you still do that now, which is a little counter thought to caring about politics. Do you follow what I'm saying? Like, if you don't give a shit until what happens at the end of the week, the big picture stuff doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's not I don't give a shit, but it's just the life of a musician is a very up and down kind of thing. And you can set yourself up for a fall, you know, if I'm going to do this and I'm going to do this and I'm going to, and it rarely don't happen. And then what you didn't think was going to happen just comes up. So you just kind of go with it. I understand what you mean, right. But I'm not even I'm thinking about me. I'm thinking about, you know, politically, I'm thinking about my kids, kind of young men now and in bands and things who will want to tour. I'm thinking about other people in my scenario and just what's morally right.
One of the funniest things that I read about you that really made everyone knows that Bill Grundy appearance. Yeah. That's like nothing could be more synonymous with the Sex Pistols than that appearance, right? But I love that your dad got mad at you, not because of anything said or done, but because people started calling your mom Mrs. Sex Pistol.
Yeah, the gaspard, yeah.
and nothing to do with what you do. Who gives a shit about cursing on T? It doesn't matter. But your mom's not happy, so now we're pissed. That's really funny.
It's kind of funny, but it was also there's always a downside. I'm friends with Maggie Ronson, who's Mick Ronson's sister.
Yeah.
And when Bowie did that big interview in the Melody Mate, it's quite famous, where he come out and said he was bisexual, whether he was or not, I don't know, I don't really care, but he said it. It kind of propelled him to bigger fame in England because it was outrageous. But they just got some money through from a record company advance, and Mick Ronson bought his mum and dad a new car, and one of the neighbours, because of that article, threw brake fluid over the car.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah. It's kind of, you know, it's a petty-mindedness of people. But, you know, you do a big thing like that, there's always some kind of little backlash that you don't even kind of consider. And I felt bad for my mum, but it was in the days before mobile phones and things.
Right, that's also a big part of it.
You know, I didn't speak to my dad for a year or so.
Right, that's why.
Wow. After that.
Because my mum made his life hell.
Oh, my God. My favorite, everyone talks about that. I like that Steve is wearing, a shirt with a woman's tits on television, right?
Yeah.
No one brings that up. That's also, utterly insane.
The girls in the background, too, seem totally just
well, Susie, absolutely. I think, had a swastika, right?
She had a swastika on, yeah.
Yeah, Susie from the Banshees. Yeah, she had a swastika on. She's kind of got full bondage gear on at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, Mary. Yeah. Which is, don't even mention it.
That's really wild.
At 10 p.m. wild. Maybe, but yeah, 5, really don't wild. Do it.
And then I like that, you know, just to jump around your career a little bit, you did do an album with Iggy Pop, Soldier, right?
Yeah.
And the quote that I would like a little more explanation on, please, is that you got a bit fed up of seeing Iggy Pop's penis.
Oh, right.
Okay. He whips it around all the time, right?
I know, but just, I don't know, just a funny line.
It's I don't want to go there too much, but when I played with him, and half jokingly, I said, you know, when you're going to do that, it appears that I've never felt the need to do that. If you're going to whip it out in the crowd, you got to get ready to whip it out in the crowd. And you always used to get ready in front of me. Yeah?
So crazy.
You know, on a 30-date tour.
It's enough. Right. Yeah.
Well, you know, he was supposed to replace Morrison after he died. And he was upstairs in a building, like they rented out. The band was jamming. They go, Iggy, come on, let's practice. Iggy runs down naked, starts swinging his cock. Ray Manzarek, all those guys stop. And they go, Iggy, what are you doing? And apparently he goes, I'm just trying to feel it, man.
Oh, my God.
And then Manzarek's like, well, there's no girls here or whatever. Why don't we just practice a song? He's like, okay, good point. And he was out of the band like 2 days later.
That's really funny. All right, before we go any further, it's two simple words. One is 60 and one is dollars. $60. In what form? Kilos. That's right. Kilos of kratom. You feel cool. You're buying in kilos. Only drug dealers do that. Well, drug dealers and Kratom fans. And if you go to yourkratom.com, you could stock up on all the Kratom you want at $60 a kilo. High-quality curated Kratom delivered directly to your door with super fast shipping. Really good quality Kratom. And they've been a loyal sponsor to this show and the entire Gas Digital Network for 3 years, three fucking years, they've been a part of this network. It's amazing. So go there, yokratom.com. I know Shannon likes the train wreck. I've seen a lot of other strains around the studio. Everybody loves their Kratom. And you, too, can stock up on $60 kilos at yokratom.com. Let's get back into it. And so now, again, feel free to fact check me on this, but if this is it's a fascinating start of this, all of this is true, that in 1979 was your first time in New York City playing with Iggy Pop, right? And I think it was at the Palladium, which I used to work at the Palladium, believe it or not. And Deborah Harry was there, dressed as a witch.
As I remember it, yeah.
Kissed you on the cheek, and now you're in Blondie.
Oh, now we're in Blondie.
Maybe she really liked the kiss.
Well, you know, I like to be gentlemanly about it. But yeah, no, I mean, that was a cool arrival in New York. It was Halloween. Back then, in England, nobody really knew what Halloween was. And right. You guys really go for it. The whole audience was in Halloween gear. The Cramp supported us.
That's oh, wow. Cool. Cool.
The best.
And I got a little peck on the cheek. Only a tiny little peck on the cheek.
But this is what's weird. That part is true. But the weird thing is then, when you did a couple of shows at Roseland Ballroom, Uma Thurman kissed you on the cheek. Seems to be a pattern here.
There seems to be a pattern.
Who's going to be this time in New York? Who's
Shannon,
coming?
You want to kiss him on the cheek while we're here?
What about the girl played Wednesday? Think she's going to do it?
Yeah, no, I'm a very kissable kind of guy.
That's what it is.
You're very dapper, sir.
Apparently, and not only that, Iggy Pop needs to get aroused by looking at you also. So it all kind of... Yeah.
But it's a good expression in English. I get away with it sometimes. You say, oh, thanks for doing that. And you go... Well, it was the least I could do. So maybe the girls think it's the least I could do, and they sling their up.
And then also what I love is when you were a kid, you would like lip sync to the Faces, and you played with the Faces. Yes. I mean, those kind of like fucking holy shit moments, they have to affect you.
How do you think I felt? It was a holy shit moment.
It is pretty wild, right? Yeah. I mean, when you first stepped out on tour with the Faces... And that came just by asking, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Well, no, it became through my friendship with Ian McGlagan, mm-hmm. who I'd met. He played on a track on the Rich Kids album, which was my band after the Sex Pistols, which actually, well, I remember, it's actually coming out again. We've remastered it, and the Rich Kids album, which has never been officially released in America, is now coming out for Record Store Day. So look out.
Oh, that's cool.
Gonna be great.
Goes to Princes and Towns. But anyway, Ian McGlagan plays on that, and he did a tour with us, and I got really chummy with him, and I kept in touch, but then we hadn't seen each other for ages. And then he was in London doing a radio show. I knew the guys at the radio show. I heard him on my car radio, and I called up the station. I said, oh, look, give Mac my number. And he called me up as soon as it was finished. Hooked up. I said, what are you doing? And he said, well, I've been doing a bit with Dylan, I think he said, and Springsteen. Ian McGlagan's keyboard playing was up there with Booker T, I think. Mm-hmm. And he said, then Yes keep calling me up. And he said, Yes. He said, I like a song with a beginning and a middle and an end, and they don't have that. Calling me up. He was really annoyed about it. I said, what do you really want to do? He said, well, to be honest, I'd really like to reform the Faces. This was a year and a half before it happened. And I said, look, you know, poor old Ronnie Lane had passed away by then. And I said, well, look, you know that I know that you know that I know that you know that I might be the right bloke for the job. So put a word in for us. And he did.
That's cool.
Which is cool. And then they was trying to get Rod to do it and he wouldn't do it. But it was Kenny, Mac and Ronnie. He's my all-time favourite guitarist. And... we got a guy called Mick Hucknall from Simply Red to do it. It was great. You know, the Faces to me were always a great rock band with a great soul singer. So it was still the same thing, but it wasn't rushed yet. But anyway, Mac said, you're in. You sure you can handle this? This is on the telephone. I said, Mac, I learned to play with these songs. I know him backwards. He went, oh, great. I said, yeah, it's just forwards that I struggle with.
You know, we had Little Steven on not that long ago, and he said the first time he saw the Faces, they walked out on stage at the Fillmore East over here. And we walked there, he goes, holy shit, Rod Stewart's white? Like, he had no idea. Because wow, yeah. There was no way to know that back then. Yeah. That's how we found out when he saw him on stage with Faces.
Yeah.
Pretty wild. Yeah. So what you said, what I read also is that Blondie then appeared in that one-off Vicious White Kid show that you did, that she wanted to see that show too.
Well, it wasn't just Debbie, it was Blondie. That's how I met those guys, because, you know, they started doing well in England, and there was all these American bands coming over to London and English bands in New York at the time. Probably, totally prosaic reason, but because Freddie Laker had an airline that did standby fares, and then they put them out, and then BA and all these airlines had to kind of match that. And it created this sort of transatlantic bridge for musicians. Mm-hmm. But anyway, Blondie were in London, and that's probably where I met Clem for the first time. But when they weren't touring, and they was probably doing TV shows maybe that afternoon or another afternoon, they would go out and check out bands, and they always seemed to be going out as a band, which I thought was kind of
cool.
Sweet.
Yeah, that's always cool.
So I kind of met them a little bit back then.
And did you never remind her of your first kiss with her, though?
No.
Okay, fair enough. But I love that whole Vicious White Kids thing started just because you and Sid, like people, said people think we hate each other, let's do this as a goof, right?
Yeah, but did it as a goof. But it was kind of cool, and it was sold out on word of mouth and... a few days, really.
And I forgot who it was, but a few people said that was their favorite thing you ever did, was that, right? That one-off show, right?
Who said that? I can't get him. But do you know what? There's a guy in England, I mean, he's retired now, called Rob Dickens. He signed me to Warner Chappell Publishing. Then he became a head of WA in Europe and the rest of the world, apart from America, and he's retired now. But every now and then I go and see him with a project, and he go, it's all right, you know, but I'm not sure. He said, you know what the best thing you ever did was? And I said, well, the Pistols. And he go, no. I said, what then? He said, Vicious White Kids. And he said, it was so exciting. And I said, well, why didn't you sign us? He said, because you was all too out of it. Which I couldn't really argue with.
That is pretty a wild thing that, and I don't know how to say this logically, but like, to do something, I mean, of course, at the time, who the fuck knew? But you were 20 when you left originally, I think, right? Yeah. And to be part of something.
Maybe 20 and a half.
20 and a half.
Get it right in those notes, right?
That, I don't know, you're early 60s now, I think. I don't want to be telling tales out of school, but something like
Let's leave it at that.
Somewhere in that area. So let's just say 40-something years ago, right? To be a part of something so fucking monumental that was so long ago. It's got to be weird that this long after. People are still so fascinated about the 20-year-old you. Is that, you know, am I evoking that correctly?
Yeah, it is kind of. It's always been like that, though. It's one of my favorite sort of analogies is I've read some interview with Keith Richards, right? And the guy asked him all these questions, a big article. And at the end, there was like a silly question. He said, oh, Keith, one more thing. How much is a pint of milk? And he went, hey, man, I don't know. I've been a rock star all my life. I've never been a rock star all my life, but I've been an ex-Sex Pistol all my life, and it's just the way it is.
Right, just the way it is.
What can I do about it?
Because I can't imagine, well, first, no one would give a fuck what I did at 20, right? But
I care, Ralph.
The thought of anyone asking me about it, remember that you did 30 years ago? Like who the fuck? Like, it's wild to me. It is wild.
Well, they changed
England. You changed
England. Like, that was, yes, and music. It's never been the same since, thank God.
And also, you were responsible for technically the biggest hits on the record, too. I mean, the ones that everyone are synonymous with the Pistols. That's you.
Yeah, all the toe tappers.
Yeah, that's
toe
all
tappers.
You. Right? That is wild. They're just fucking crazy. I just find it just such a, to know that, I mean, granted, you've been living with this for 40-something years, but you changed music. It's like you're part of history. You're just fucking wild.
And there's no way to, you're always going to be that. That's going to be the first line when you're gone.
There you go. But I mean, I think to myself, yeah, all right, mate. I don't know. What can I do about it? It's done.
Right, but also,
I like to live in the present. Doff my cap to the past and look to the future, you know.
Yeah, because you've put out, I think, 6 solo records, you know, and you're in, as we said, you're with Blondie now, at least like a permanent sideman or something like that for Blondie, right?
Something like that.
And, you know, with all
General factotum.
So it is just, you know, even with, let's say this album goes fucking 10 times platinum. I don't know what that means. They sell 9 records. It doesn't matter anymore, right? But whatever it means, you're always going to be an ex-Sex Pistol first. It's wild. It's just wild to me.
What can I do?
I agree. And also, I haven't heard it yet also, but on the new record, there's a doo-wop song.
Yeah, doo-wop-ish.
Inspired by If I Only Had Eyes For You.
Yeah, by the Flamingos.
Right,
which
I know the song.
Used to be on the jukebox in Let It Rock. So
it all full
Let
circle.
It Rock was the store that
right,
I worked
with Malcolm
at.
McLaren.
I met Malcolm, Steve and Paul and then John, yeah.
Is it true that your favorite song on the new record is Speaking in Tongues?
Some mornings. You know, I do these things and people ask you for like 10, 20 favorite songs or all that. I can't just give them to. I have to think about it because it all depends what side of bed you got out that morning. Mm-hmm. So when I said that.
At that time it was true.
Yeah. And that might necessarily be a single.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something about it I kind of dig. It sort of plays into the narrative of what some of the album's about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's all this bullshit that's going on with the politicians, and they might as well be speaking in tongues. You know?
Right, I mean, it makes sense. That's the title of the record as well. Yeah. I mean, it all makes sense.
But it's got, we'll make sure you get a copy of the finished thing.
Yeah, I would like to hear it.
but it's kind of got a groove that could be like something off of Goat's Head Soup or Exile on Main Street or something. Oh, that was the other thing I was going to say about Ian McGlagan and the Faces thing. Mm-hmm. I actually, on a drunken night, and maybe a bit more, I actually asked him to join the band, which was a bit cheeky.
That's cool, though. That's awesome.
Because, you know, he was Ian McGlagan, he was 10 years older than us and all that. And he considered it. And this is in the days before mobile phones. And he had a drink, went to bed at 2 o'clock in the morning. He had to go on the next day, all down at breakfast in the hotel. I told the other guys, asked Mac to join the band. And the guys said that. And then Mac came down and he didn't say anything. There was like an elephant in the room. Everybody got fed up with waiting to see what Mac was going to say. They all sodded off. And I woke him up. I said, do you think about what I said last night? He said, Glenn, I'm really honoured that you asked me, and I kind of would have done. He said, but I called home last night and spoke to Kim, his wife, and she had had a phone call from a band, and they want me to go and do some recording in Paris with them. I went, who's that? He went, Rolling Stones. I said, no, you better go and do that. And then he went and played on All the Miss You. But I'm really annoyed with Rolling Stones.
Yeah, fuck them, right?
Because when I was doing that Faces thing, which I love doing.
Yeah, fuck them.
Well, yeah, really. You know, it didn't happen anymore because Ronnie got a call from Mick Jagger to go and play with him again.
Right. It, just, it was the timing.
Up my career.
Yeah, it was a timing thing.
How dare they?
Well, that actually makes me add my other question, because you've been with so many different projects over the years, right?
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite time on stage? Like when you were happiest?
Mm.
Like the band you felt like you gelled with the most?
I think doing the Faces thing, really.
The Faces thing.
I think I did bring something to the table. And what was quite funny, we went to Japan. We did this. We headlined the Fuji Festival in front of 50,000 people.
Wow.
Which was a band that I used to stand in front of the mirror when I was 14 pretending I was in. We've already touched on that. But my son came with me. And my son was a big fan of Chelsea Football Club and Frank Lampard. Frank Lampard got injured, and all of a sudden, my son felt that he was injured too. Right? He sort of came out in sympathy. It was a kind of a bit of a mental kind of thing. So he wasn't doing as much sport as he could do. So I bought him a kind of the cheapest, but not that cheap, SLR camera, so he could learn how to do the lens things and all that. Digital one, all right. So he started taking pictures, and he was taking pictures of his older brother's band, and he specialised in people jumping in the air. We're about to go on stage, and I've got my son with him. I thought, what am I going to do? And there was my mate Chris, who plays drums with me, but also worked for the Fuji Festival people. He said, leave it with me. So we go on stage, and always what happens in big gigs, there's a photographer's pit down the front, and they're allowed to take 3 pictures, and then they have to clear off. Fourth number in, we're playing away. Ronnie Wood comes up and barges me while I'm playing. I'm going, what are you on about? He's going like that, like, look up. You know, Fourth number went straight into the fifth number. And he's doing it again. Ronnie's barging. I thought, what's going on? He's going, look up. And I look up. Photographer's pit. Nobody there. My son with his camera.
Oh, that's fucking cool.
It was
great.
And he took some pictures they used on the Faces website.
Oh, that's so cool. That's fucking great. That's really awesome.
That was a good moment.
It's great.
You equate bass playing with being a plumber.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate on that a bit?
Well, it's kind of, to me, my art is writing songs and presenting them. Bass playing is a skill that I enjoy doing. I enjoy doing it when somebody else is singing. And I can get onto that a little bit more later on. But it's one of those things, you know, people, oh, we're stuck for a bass player. Can you do this? You know, the same as you call up a plumber.
Oh my God, it's
or
hilarious.
Carpenter, and they go, well, yeah, I can do it, but cost you.
Oh my God.
So you feel like it's a skill, but it's utilitarian, but it's like essential. Is that a fair way to put it?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
This is hilarious. The plumber came over yesterday while I was playing bass. Swear to God. Swear to God. Look at this. Full circle. And Noah, yeah, it is really like, what do you do? Oh, you're in a band? Because I used to play a little bass. Oh, what do? Girls get fired up. They're like, and then you're like a bass player. And it's like, all right, so where's the singer? Oh, yeah. Where's the drummer? Oh, is that the drummer? All right, have fun with your drink.
Singing bass player. But, yeah. But I don't know if you guys are into soccer or...
Well, I was going to do a little gag. I was going to say, hey, Ralph, what's your thoughts on Chelsea Football Club? Yeah, he knows nothing about sports. I'm an Arsenal fan. So now I'm scared we're going to fight if you're Chelsea. Well, but yes, I love the English Premier League.
I'm not Chelsea. I'm Queen's Park Rangers. I don't really feel I can come out.
No, sure.
Let me ask you this. I watched Ted Lasso. Does that mean anything?
I don't like that show. Really, we argued all weekend. I hate it, to be honest. It's the dumbest thing ever, and I know the guy who created it, and I'll probably never be able to talk to him again. I hate it because I like real football.
I don't know anything about any of it, so I don't mind.
Anyway, for playing... Being the lead singer or the guitarist in the band is a bit like being a centre forward in football.
Because striker.
The striker. Yeah, you know.
Come on, baby.
They want the ball where they want it. You know, so they're saying to the guys behind them, you know, they're pointing. And you've got to be good at pointing. And I think if you're going to present a band, you know, playing bass, you can't take your hands off it. Hey, let's take it down to the bass and drums.
Yeah.
Oh, hang on, I'm a bass player. You know, you can't do that pointing. And it's essential, but with a...
Guitar, yeah.
A guitar, you go, blam, anyway, you at the back there, I can see you, well, don't you clap your fucking hands, bam, bam, bam.
They always have good hair. Strikers have good hair, lead singers good hair.
Yeah.
That's fun. I get it.
Rod Stewart wasn't going to play a sweeper. If he played, he's going to score the goddamn goals.
I don't know what that means. You're making sports references.
Yeah, we could just make up shit with him right now.
Let me ask you this.
But there's that bit where they do the caterpillar action, you know, which is the spider move in football.
No. Yeah. What's your favorite formation in soccer?
I know you didn't love it. I know you didn't love it for its accuracy, but was there any part of watching Pistol that you were able to enjoy it by separating yourself and just watching it as a show, or there was no way to enjoy it?
Not really, no. Okay. I bumped into Paul Weller, who's a neighbor of mine, and he said, "Did you watch that?" And I said, "Yeah." And I said, "What do you think?" Without prompting him. And just before punk, there was a really schlocky TV show called Rock Follies, right? Which was like somebody, like some thespian's idea of what it was like to be in the music business. And there was a trio of girls. One of them was Rue Lalenska, who found fame in Evita singing.
Okay.
And stuff. Another one, Julie Covington, right? And another, anyway, there's a trio of girls. And it was really, really schlocky. Anyone else? So worried. He said, "What do you think?" And he went, "Rock Follies, isn't it?"
Wow.
Oh, so he didn't like it either. Right. Well, I didn't watch it. Did you watch it?
I watched a couple episodes. I'm going to be honest. And I felt weird if this was going to be brought up. I didn't get into it. And it's so now I feel justified. And also, I remember you going on Jonesy's Jukebox when he brought it back as a podcast.
Oh, we had words. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it was great on a lot of levels. Is that you did not like it, did not like the show. And I love that you've always defended yourself. Because, I mean, as I grew up, you've said it was all bullshit. Is that the lore was like the dumb shit, washing your feet and liking the Beatles. I did like when it was brought up. If Malcolm would have said that you got thrown out because you love the Dave Clark Five, you're like, that I could accept.
Yeah,
which we all could have. But I like that you have stood up for yourself for decades about that shit. And that was kind of like, Rob, it was kind of like wrestling. Like, you say whatever you want about Malcolm, but it was to hype them up. It's why did he leave the band? Well, he liked all this music that we're against, even though the singer probably secretly liked a lot of that stuff and wasn't a punk and didn't love the Faces and didn't like all that cool shit. And it was a good way to get over the bass player who can't play. All due respect to the Dead for all these years. He was not a musician. You were the actual musician. Top musician.
That's what I said. You were the one that was the real...
But the irony is that Paul and Steve became great session guys in LA years later and London.
We had to go.
We can do that. It'll cost you.
but that ended up happening. And
we just had the Go-Go's on, and they said that helped us out. They didn't know how to play anything. They figured it out as they went, and that's part of what makes it such a cool fucking
part of the musical adventure. Yeah,
that's what makes it so cool. Yeah. And it's also funny that you were out of the band so early, and you ended up playing more Sex Pistols shows than any of them, right, at this point.
That's kind of true. Yeah, when they reformed. I mean, I'm really like one of those, you know, gas station, first and last before the freeway.
I have two other questions, and we'll do the first because we're almost out of time. One is, how the fuck did you not get glennmatlock.com? Who stole it?
I had it, and I let it slip, and somebody's got it, and I've ended up with
glennmatlock.co.uk, right? .co.uk, right?
Well, who wants my name?
It is weird. I bet you could, like,
hang on, watch what you're saying there.
I said, I think if you email them, like, dude, come on, just give me my fucking...
I did. They didn't reply, and then it comes up. And then what they do, they nick pictures of my thing.
And put it on there.
Last time I checked and put it... So they kind of promote.
And even your Instagram, someone stole Glenn Matlock. You're Glenn Matlock one.
It's going around a lot. Uh-huh. There's loads of people. Some guy, I presume it is, writes these really flowery, excuse me, I'm really impressed that you have been a long-time follower of my career. Will you please kindly write to me directly at my director? And it's like this bog standard thing, but whoever's doing it writes to all these kind of...
Oh, man.
Really?
Women of a certain age.
Oh, wow.
You know, they keep writing to me saying, Glenn, is this year? No, and I keep reporting it and nothing ever happens.
But that's probably Jonesy. Let's be honest. Weird,
but it's happening to a lot of people. You know?
Yeah, you know,
it might be. It probably is Jonesy.
That seems like his MO of years of listening to the radio show.
Yeah, but some of the words they use have four syllables.
We had the singer Foreigner on, and he said that happens to him all the time.
Oh, yeah.
He said that literally all the time women think they're going to get engaged to him. And he finds out that, oh, no, I didn't do any of that. Like, that's fucking crazy.
It wasn't me. Who did that song?
That was
Shaggy. Who we've had on the show.
Yeah, that's right. We had Shaggy on the show.
Let's just get them all together.
Am I sitting in the same seat as Shaggy?
We did it through Zoom, unfortunately. And now here's my last weird question. Are you still a collector of Supercar, Stingray, and Fireball stuff that I saw a whole video?
I've got those three.
Okay.
And I'm quite happy with the three. It's all from... Did you have Thunderbirds over here?
Yeah, I know what it is. It's, and then, you know, the South Park guys kind of...
I'm concerned for your listeners. They might not know what it is.
Okay. I would say that it was... Well, if you watch the South Park guys movie, the one they did, the America with the puppets...
Team America.
Yeah. That was a homage to Thunderbirds.
Right.
Oh, yeah, I know Thunderbirds.
With swear words.
Yes, exactly.
America. Yeah. Fuck yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you had, I mean, those look like
expensive.
I got those
three. They're the coolest one. I wouldn't mind the Thunderbird one. They were presents. They're like die-cast models, and they're kind of cool.
Oh, that reminds me, I heard the story. I don't know if you told me this story, but Penn and Teller, right? Who's the one that talks? Penn. Right? Penn was saying he had an autographed, like, Beatles record, or, like, a very hard-to-find one. And he said he wanted another one. There's only, like, five in existence. He said, if anyone finds me this, I will tell you how all of our secrets are done, right? And a week later, it showed up in the mail, and it was from Teller, and he wrote a letter, shut your fucking mouth. That's a great
story. That's spectacular, yeah.
All right, so we got to do the first, Shannon. We're almost out of time with this man.
This is great.
The first time ever I saw concert Detroit.
It is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. We've asked every guest this since the donor time. The first experience with all three. We start with rock and roll, and we just mean the first concert you went to. Hopefully we'll know the band, not some local band we never heard of, but maybe that's going to be the case. Who knows? What are the first concert Glenn Matlock ever went to?
The first one that I actually bought a ticket for,
yes.
I went to see, there was a TV show called Take Three Girls,
mm-hmm.
and a band did the music for it, and it was a band called Pentangle.
Okay.
And they were like a folk kind of rock band, but mm-hmm. they were jolly good. And it was some of the guys from Fairport Convention, and it was John Renbourne on guitar, and I think Dave Mattox on drums, and Danny Thompson, fantastic stand-up bass player, who played on all the Donovan stuff and all that.
Yeah.
I kind of went for that reason.
How old were you?
I was about 14 and a half, 15.
Wow. That's a young one. That's cool.
Yeah. So it wasn't the hippest thing to go to, but I was glad that I saw him. And the singer, Jackie McShee, had the most kind of sweet, kind of scatty jazz singing, but in a folk way kind of voice.
At that point, 14, 15 year old you, did you know that music was what you were going to be focusing on? Because you already had a guitar for a few years.
Yeah, beginning to. And then around about that time, I always had jobs on a Saturday, you know, filling up the shelves in a local store and doing deliveries. And I was very miffed that I could have gone, but I couldn't go because I had to work, was when the Stones played in Hyde Park, the first gig with
Mick Taylor,
you know, after Brian Jones died, and I missed that because I had to deliver Mrs. Brown's milk and soap powder. Weren't too happy about that. And not long after that, I did go and see Humble Pie supporting Grand Funk Railroad.
Wow.
Which was kind of cool. And I did manage to get my deliveries done early and then go in the afternoon. Humble Pie was fantastic. And that's when Peter Frampton was still in the band.
Oh, wow.
And he looked great. He had this kind of O'Donnell coloured loon pants suit. You know what loon pants are?
No.
That's what they used to call them. They used to be adverts in the back of Melody Maker, like kind of jeans, slightly kind of flared, matching jacket, really tight with tulip lapels, And fancy. He had his shirt undone. And he had a shark's tooth hanging down there. And
I like
had,
a good shark's tooth.
He had tan Cuban heel boots on and his hair blowing like that. You know, and he was a real rock star. It's fantastic.
By the way, Peter Frampton also been Guess on the show.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that the Rolling Stones took it personal, you not showing up, and that's why they screwed you over twice later in your career? Where is that Matlock kid? Well, we'll get him later.
Yeah, he was supposed to be at the show. Fuck him.
You think Bill Wyman was taking his hands like this?
Oh, there you go. You know, I was very pleased with the Stones when Wyman left. There was a French magazine called Best, rather Rock and Folk were Best, and they had their top 10 most likely replacements for the bass player, and I was kind of number 6 in that.
So oh, that's fucking awesome.
I never asked me, but there you go.
I wonder who else was ahead of you. I mean, they went with someone no one expected. They went with Miles Davis, his old bass player.
Yeah, but he's pretty good.
He's pretty good.
I've met him a couple of times. He's pretty cool. But you know what? I could have done that. But do you know what? It'll cost you.
There it is. There it is. Sometimes you got to clean the toilet. Yeah. Sometimes you got to play G.
And now the first drug you ever did. After weed, unless weed wasn't your first drug.
Do you know what? I wasn't really that big a druggie. I think a bit of speed. You know, sulfate was the punk kind of thing.
That was the punk drug of the time.
But I mean, I was always a boozer, you know.
Right, so. Right. All right. And how old were you when that was speed, was the thing?
Probably about 16 or 17.
Was that the drug of choice for Sex Pistols?
It's just what was around. Okay. Yeah. Well, in fact, it's in the song, 17. Mm-hmm. I don't work, I just speed, it's all I need. Not my lyric, but...
they were what, called Black Beauties?
Oh, well, there was Black Beauties as well, yeah.
What's the one that is the 70s drug always people bring up? Fuck.
Angel Dust?
No.
Quaaludes.
Quaaludes. Quaaludes is always brought up.
Yo.
They don't exist anymore. That's always...
No, that was... Might have taken one or two. There's another one called Tunel, which was
Tunel,
red and blue.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Heard of that?
Which was a bit like a Quaalude.
It's funny how like seems like a lot of. It's weird that a drug would just stop existing. You know what I mean? Like you don't see that at all anymore.
If Quaalude still existed, they would be in a boom because the Wolf of Wall Street, which is 10 years old, was the greatest commercial for that goddamn drug you've ever seen.
Well, there you go. But what I found out with drugs over the years, I like that Eddie Murphy thing. Eddie Murphy sketch.
Which one's that?
Well, he's talking about people taking cocaine, you know, which makes you grin like that.
Yeah.
And but then you're kind of feeling a bit too high, you know, and then you need something to calm you down. So you take a big long drag on, you know, marijuana joint, a pot or whatever you call it here like that. He said, but it's no good because it's, and you've got to keep the smoking. He said, but it's no good because the smoke just comes out of the hole of the cocaine, mate. You know,
and you've been sober a while now, anyway.
I've been
sober
a long while now.
Yeah, yeah. And now the first time you had sex.
Well, the nearly first time.
Even better.
I really like the way that's starting.
It was funny. It was really early Pistols days. I think even before John was in the band, and we had a mad night out, which culminated in us, Malcolm McLaren, and this American lady who was in London at the time. He took a shine to me. Driving from a club in Dingwalls called Dingwalls down to Brighton for the night, and then we got a hotel. Me and her in one room, and Steve, Paul, and Malcolm, and Wally in the other room, and it was facing the sea. And the young lady, who was a bit older than me, went to draw the curtains. I said, don't draw the curtains, we can see the sea, right? Next morning, I get up, I'm having breakfast. Steve Jones starts giving me tips about. And I'm thinking, how do you know? What had happened was he got out and he crawled along the ledge. And he
watched you guys? Oh, that's fucking great.
Which fits with him because he's a noted Peeping Tom. Peeping that's in the Tom. Book.
Yeah.
Dude, everyone needs to go get I Was a Teenage Sex Pistol. Yeah, it's spectacular.
You can still get on Amazon.
It's spectacular.
I was upset because I like to listen to books and you didn't do an audiobook.
No, I would do one. It's just the opportunity hasn't arisen.
Because I run and I listen to books when I run.
Okay.
Yeah, and my
I like traveling and listening to books. Yeah. I'm a big fan of it. What's it? War, you know, who wrote Scoop, and I always get confused with him and his dad, Ober and War, the other one.
So you're too smart.
And
for
he's got
me,
he's got a really dark sense of sardonic humor. He wrote Brideshead Revisited as well.
I'm going to be honest.
But there's a talking book that's narrated by the guy who plays Manuel in 40 Towers, and he's fantastic. It really drags you in.
I always get upset if I'm listening to an autobiography and the guy who it's about or person it's about is not doing the audio. I get fucking annoyed.
Oh, you feel cheated.
I feel really cheated. Yeah, so if you're going to do it, it better be you. That's all I'm going to say.
I really want to get the Tom Jones autobiography because I just think it's going to be fun, but he doesn't do it.
Yeah, it's so weird.
It's one of the guys from Game of Thrones. So for the last 2 weeks, I'm debating if he's close enough.
So stupid. Like we, Mel Brooks' autobiography.
It's spectacular.
It's like 12 hours and he did all of it.
Yeah.
It's fucking great. He's 90. If he could do it, you can fucking do it.
And you could tell he's burning calories recording. He's like,
he's so great.
I've heard him make movement in it.
Oh, it's so great. I love that. I'll tell everyone to get that.
Oh, it's great.
You convinced me. So soon already, boys.
Let's do this. I'll produce it. I would be honored
to. Yeah, do it. It would make me really, really happy. I know you probably have, before we wrap with this man, you're such a Pistols fan. I don't want to end without giving you some options. My only other question, do you guys ever talk still, like get together and just kind of bullshit?
Yeah, I speak to Paul in London. Mm-hmm. Not everybody lives in the same place. Paul's got his band of professionals going, and I got up and played with them just before Christmas.
And they're great, too. Mm-hmm.
And I spoke to Steve last week, and I'm probably going to meet up with him and have dinner with him when I get back to LA. I'm flying back to LA. Shortly. Is this going out live or is it?
It's coming out next week.
Last week, I flew back to Los Angeles and I saw Steve Jones at dinner.
How did it go?
Look,
any last questions?
I mean, I have so many. I got in a fight this weekend with my boys about this.
It's more of a statement than a question.
Well, no, but I still say this. I think punk rock comes to me the ultimate punk song. And you guys covered it and a lot of other guys. I think I'm Not Your Stepping Stone is like the. I don't know what you call it, Excalibur, whatever that it all comes from, and it's Paul Revere and the Raiders technically, but I think everyone shits on the Monkees, but to me that Monkees version led to all this great stuff.
Yeah, I don't think we would have known that was Paul Cook's idea to cover that. I don't think we would have known that Paul Revere and the Raiders at that stage, so it does come from the Monkees.
Goddamn
but
Monkees.
I think punk rock goes back earlier. Though.
Sure, but I think that song to me is the ultimate like first punk song to me. I love it.
Louis to me.
Of course. Pretty good. I mean, can we get a little crazy?
Do you know
this game called Fuck, Marry, Kill? Where you either have to have sex with someone, marry someone, or kill your former bandmates. Paul, Steve, and Rotten. I'm pretty sure I know who's getting killed in this. But
well, I don't know that I'm really up for killing anybody. I might.
How about injure?
Kick him in the shins.
Yeah.
Kick him in the shins. All right. Fuck, marry, kicking the shins. We've just recreated a game that all the children are playing out there.
Oh, God. This is going to get me in trouble.
We've had wilder stuff happen on the show, sir.
But so what have I got to do?
Okay, so one of these guys...
You're going to marry?
And one of these guys you're gonna get sorted out with. And the other one you kick in the shins.
Well, I think it'll have to be the Fuhrer.
Yeah, I would imagine that would be the first one.
That's right. You referred to him as the Fuhrer.
Steve is a very touchy-feely kind of guy. I mean, if he was sitting there now, he'd probably have his hand on your knee or my knee or all of our knees, which is not bad since there's three of us and he's only got two hands. Perhaps I'd marry Steve. Oh, no, he's Paul. It's a tricky question.
Paul seems like he keeps his mouth shut and just handles things. He seems like the logical one to marry.
Yeah, but is that the shagging kind?
No, you don't have to marry. It could be a loveless marriage, a marriage of friendship.
I feel like he might have breakfast for you when you wake up.
When I was a kid at school, there was this book of rugby songs. You know what rugby is? It's like it's like American football without
sport Ralph likes.
But there's all these songs, and there was a song that went round, "If I was the marrying kind, which thank the Lord I'm not, sir, the kind of man that I would wed... would be a rugby fullback. He'd fall back, I'd fall back, we'd both fall back together, we'd be all right in the middle of the night, falling back together." And it goes on about scrumming in and being fly off and all that lot. So we're kind of in that kind of territory. But that, if you're a Sex Pistols fan, it came from a book which also had Friggin' in the Riggin' in it.
And that's Friggin' in the Riggin', Friggin' in the Riggin'. Come on, man.
Friggin' in the Riggin', there was fuck all else to do.
I love
fucking
it.
Fucking cool.
Come on, baby.
All right,
Audrey Shakespeare.
Don't go to glennmatlock.com. Fuck that guy. Yeah. Go to glennmatlock.co.uk and at glennmatlock1 on Instagram. The new album, Consequences, coming is April 27th.
I've also got a YouTube channel these days.
Okay. I'm sure that's easy to find as well.
Glenn Matlock something or other.
Glenn Matlock something or
you're
other.
So, you're
just
so
Google
tech savvy,
that.
Sir. You're so tech savvy.
I love it.
But I just go to glennmatlock.co.uk. It all links there.
Yeah.
Or find on Instagram. There's the link in the Instagram as well that takes you there. It is a goddamn honor.
Absolutely
nice
wonderful.
Us.
And we'll do this ship. We add a song every week to the playlist. So we'll add this ship as the song to the sdrshow.com/playlist. Plugs.
The James Mattern, the James Mattern on Instagram and the YouTubes. Check out the Check Spot still out there on video. You can order the vinyl of the Check Spot. There's a few copies left on pinchrecords.com. And yeah, man, I think I'm going to be in England. We can't announce it yet, but I think I'm going to be in England and Ireland end of summer, beginning of fall, and I'm pumped
up.
What
term? All right, you know, your band.
What's a, well, no, I'm a comic. I'm a stand-up.
Oh, right.
So
okay.
I'm going to go there and make fun of people's shirts and talk some shit. So that's it.
Sounds like a plan. That's going to fill the full 20 minutes, maybe, making fun of people's shirts?
Full 20 minutes, baby. The full hour, baby. Yeah, right. Don't shortchange me.
Follow me over at I Am Ralph Sutton. My other podcast in health and wellness is called The Good Trigger Podcast. Our store is opening while we're taping this on Tuesday. It's opening this Tuesday. So oh, come wow. down to 3rd Avenue, 69th Street. Eat something healthy and good for you. And honestly, dude, just a fucking honor to have you on. We're thrilled to have you here.
Thanks for having us, James.
Thank you so much.
Royalty. James Ralph.
Oh, wait, fuck. Shannon.
Shannon, get your plug in.
Your plug's in. I almost forgot. I got so excited.
It's okay. You can follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is. Dang, we talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts. Guests come on and tell their own stories about their worst date experience, a time they got into a street fight, and an experience with the paranormal.
Now, do not indicate
no
at all, but we asked this question at the end. Shannon's show is about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts. We all have to guess, does Glenn Matlock believe in ghosts? I'm saying no. Shannon?
I feel like no.
James?
I don't think there's a chance in hell that he says yes. I'm going no.
Do you believe in ghosts?
So it's boring.
I think you're pretty all right, Ray.
All right, good. On that note,
that was easy money, dog.
We'll see everybody next time.
Okay.
On the SDR Show.
Now, won't you tell me something I wanna know? You got what you wanted, but what we gotta show? I'm fitting a bullet. That's no more obligation, no more trust. I followed every angle and every scam about how you're sucking it to the man. But the curtains fall on from these eyes. High time to start saying my bye-bye. No time for turning back. The trains are rolling down the track. No one knows right now. Look out, I'm gonna watch my back. This ship, I said the ship has already. This ship, I hear the ship's already. This ship, I said the ship has already sailed. Ah, yeah. You took away my sea. You spared no quarter, but the forecast today is just deeper hot water. Made some a pretty clear cut, cool observation. There's a only one way that's gonna square the equation. No time for holding back. Let's face the music, face the facts. The odds are well and truly stacked. We gotta get out from this cul-de-sac. This ship, I said the ship has already. This ship, I hear the ship's already. This ship, I said the ship has already sailed. Ah, so it has now. Got what you wanted, but what we gotta show. I'm fitting a bully, fitting a thirst. Now no more obligation, no more trust. No time for turning back. These trains are rolling down the track. Ain't a card, no one knows right now. Look out, I gotta watch my back. This ship, I said the ship has. This ship, I hear the ship's already. This ship, I say the ship has already sailed. Oh yeah. This ship, I say the ship has already. This ship, I hear the ship's already. This ship, I say the ship has already sailed. Oh, already sailed.
You've been listening to the SDR Show.